Hello, this is Dustin Tomacara with the Decatur Herald and Review for today, Wednesday, December 4th, 2019. And we are going to begin today's reading here on the front page with the headline, Here to Help. Students honored for role in community food drive. And this story comes to us from Danette Beckett. Giving Tuesday was a good day to honor Decatur students who gave it their all to collect food and money this fall. Organizers of the 18th annual WSOY Community Food Drive filled an Eisenhower High School theater to honor the top collectors for the annual event, held over 12 hours, October 4th at the Airport Plaza Kroger. Eisenhower took the top honor, followed by St. Teresa High School in second, and Our Lady of Lourdes Catholic in third. Lady of Lourdes Catholic in third. St. Patrick's School came in fourth, and then there was Mount Zion Intermediate in fifth. And each school received a check for their hard work and contributions. It's not just doing the academic thing right, but also understanding the need to serve their community, said Decatur School Superintendent Paul Forgot. I'm proud of all of our buildings that participated. Organizers of the food drive had a goal of raising 1.5 million pounds of food. They ended up collecting $1,695,771/pounds of food. The goods are distributed to community groups and those in need. Julia Livingston, executive director of Macon County CASA, organizes the Judy Mason Thanksgiving Basket Project. She says that we were able to use our funds towards this year's project of 4,000 boxes. The boxes were given to families days before Thanksgiving, and competition among area schools has been a key component of the food drive. The schools learned of their rankings at the end of the food drive, and the idea is to focus on that day, said Brian Byers, vice president of development at Neuhoff Media. The first food drive 18 years ago gathered 35,000 pounds of food that filled a box truck. That seemed like a ton of food, Byers said. This year, cash and donations included, would have been the equivalent of 23 semis lined up back to back. Now, food drive organizer Kevin Berhaney credits the success to the schools. He says, "We knew the kids would really buy into wanting to help. They got their parents involved, then their parishioners and churches involved." Eisenhower principal Amy Zahm Duncan was able to encourage the students to participate in the food drive, but it was a whole school effort, she said. The teachers included their students in competitions. Students also contributed during parties and homecoming celebrations. This year, the school focused on monetary donations instead of food. "We just advertised and reached out to families," Zahm Duncan said. Eisenhower senior Zachariah Fuller was one of the participating students. "I would bring in a dollar or a few cans," he said. "I always liked to participate, but they encouraged me. It's always fun whenever the whole school does it." The presentation on Tuesday coincided with Giving Tuesday, which has become a day for people to donate to causes and groups. For the food drive, cash awards were available through the sponsorships by Archer Daniels Midland, First Mid Bank and Trust, and J.L. Hubbard Insurance and Bonds, a First Mid Insurance group, Skeff Distributing, Jones and Thomas/JT Net, Decatur Back and Neck Center. Okay, this is a long list. Let's see, that was the Decatur Back and Neck Center. Tickets and Trips, First Christian Church, Dale's South Lake Pharmacy, and Coley's Corner Drugs. Oh, I'm sorry, that's one group there. Dale's South Lake Pharmacy and Coley's Corner Drugs. Dyna Graphics, Kroger, Herald and Review, WAND-TV, United Way of Decatur and Mid-Illinois, the Community Foundation, and Neuhoff Media. Now, Byer said the school donations were equivalent to approximately $500,000, providing food through various organizations and agencies. A lot of that money is going to be deposited in our new partners at the Central Illinois Food Bank, where these pantries are going to buy even more food for their dollar than they ever have been before, Byer said. Grants were given to local agencies, including Good Samaritan Inn, Northeast Community Fund, Big Blue Backpacks, Helping Hands Food Pantry, and others. Tate and Lyle Representative Mike Womeldorf addressed the students and sponsors attending the ceremony. The company partnered with the Decatur Public Schools, awarding the top five public schools with $500 gift cards during the last school board meeting. According to Ed Bacon, Executive Director for Northeast Community Fund, his agency serves approximately 200 needy families a day. "We have seen an increase in families," he said. "Food insecurity exists here in Decatur." The agency offers assistance in various ways, including financial and physical. "We are best known for our food pantry," Bacon said. "It's because of you that we've been able to stock our shelves and help people." You may contact the reporter of this story, Donette Beckett, at 217-421-6983. There's also a couple of pictures here that accompany the story from Clay Jackson Photos of the Herald and Review. There's a large photo right on the front page, shows students from Macon County Schools, including St. Teresa High School and Eisenhower High School, in attendance at the 18th annual WSOY Community Food Drive Award Ceremony that took place Tuesday at Eisenhower. And the caption continues to read here with the photo that students were honored for collecting food and funds for the annual event. And then there's another picture on the next page, some folks who were mentioned by name in the story. It's a picture of Eisenhower High School principal Amy Zahm Duncan and student Zachariah Fuller cheering on attendees during the award ceremony. And there's Zachariah is holding a large check from Eisenhower High School, a donation of $2,500. Let's go back to the front page here. Excuse me. And let's go, to another story, part of Giving Tuesday. Giving Tuesday event promotes community generosity. There's a picture here of Bill Horton giving cash to Kathy Graven of the Girl Scouts of Central Illinois at First United Methodist Church during the Giving Tuesday event. And this story by Garrett Karsten. After 3 days of the crazed buying frenzy that follows Thanksgiving, Giving Tuesday carries on to remind community members about the reason for the season. First United Methodist Church hosted its fifth annual Giving Tuesday event where residents could make donations to local nonprofit agencies and organizations at the church's 201 West North Street property. People could also talk with representatives about ways to get involved in nonprofit missions and programs. It's important from an awareness standpoint for the community to understand all these different organizations, said Peggy Ruff, Symphony Orchestra Guild of Decatur president. Traditionally held on the Tuesday after Thanksgiving, Giving Tuesday is meant as an answer to the commercialized retail holidays of Black Friday, and that's holidays in quotes, the commercialized retail holidays of Black Friday, Small Business Saturday, and Cyber Monday. The movement was founded in 2012 by New York's 92nd Street Y and the United Nations Foundation. I assume the Y is in reference to a YMCA there on 92nd Street in New York City. The idea is to encourage people who are spending freely on holiday gifts to contribute some of that money toward local charitable efforts, such as the Symphony Orchestra Guild. The organization provides scholarships to Decatur Public School students interested in furthering their musical education in college. It also gives an annual funding contribution to the Milliken Decatur Symphony Orchestra. Jennifer Horton Motter, Director of Children and Family Ministries at First United, described the event as like a one-stop shop. People could browse each organization's table, which were spread out across the lower level of the church. "I thought it would be so cool if we could expend our energy shopping for charity, getting to know the charities, and shopping for the one you feel like supporting," said Horton Motter, who first organized the event in 2015. This year involved 30 local organizations, including Macon County CASA, the Boys and Girls Club of Decatur, the Decatur Salvation Army, and the Northeast Community Fund, among others that serve people in need around the community. Meanwhile, volunteers like Anna Armstrong, age 81, helped serve a lunch of cold cuts, fruit, chips, cookies, and refreshments to the nonprofit representatives. Armstrong, a member of First United, said she makes select charitable donations each year. It's important for our community to do that for all the people these organizations provide funds and goods for, she said. Horton Motter said she became determined to get involved or to involve Decatur in the national movement after seeing all the arguments about Black Friday, shopping, Christmas, and the commercialism of it on social media. Another really unique piece to having a local event is these organizations are often coordinating resources on the phone or through email, she said. But they don't always have the time to get to know each other to build those personal relationships. According to Morton Hodder, nonprofit organizations have collectively raised nearly $74,000 in the last 4 years. And you may contact the reporter of the story, Garrett Karsten, at 217-421-6949. Thanks for listening. And now go back to the front page here for another story. This one from Marie Fazio of the Chicago Tribune. Illinois adults in need of services face a long wait. Nick Redfern, diagnosed with autism, filled his school days with lessons and field trips that taught him skills he needs for a life on his own. But that all changed when he turned 22. Aging out of the state's public special education system, Nick now stays at home, where his mother worries he is becoming more and more isolated and losing what he has learned. She wants to get him into adult programs funded by the state that would continue his training and maybe even set him up in a group home. Susie Redfern has been waiting for a spot to open for 3 years. Her son is now 25. I'm hoping he'll have activities and work every day and get the support he needs to basically have a life that's more than just me and my husband, Redfern said, because we're not going to be here forever. Nick is among nearly 20,000 disabled adults in Illinois who are on a waiting list to get into adult programs. Many of them come from families who don't have a way to pay for home care, job coaches, or other services. Most wait an average of 7 years before they are selected, despite a court order in 2011 that Illinois shrink the list and do other things to improve how it serves developmentally disabled adults. One family told the Tribune they signed up their child when he was just 5, and he still did not get a spot when he turned 22 this year. At a hearing in October, U.S. District Judge Sharon Johnson Coleman said the state was still not complying with the order. As a result, she said, people have suffered substantially and called the current situation, for lack of a better phrase, messed up. Experts in the field say parents are quitting jobs to take care of their children and even moving to other states. The truth of the matter is we're in the midst of a crisis, said Rebecca Clark, CEO of the Annixter Center, Annixter, A-N-I-X-T-E-R, Center, which provides day programming, residential group homes, and other services for people with disabilities. Keeping people engaged in programs is so critical, she says, because it allows them to continue to move forward toward their independence and meaningful lives and potentially job experiences. A gap in services can cause magnificently terrible setbacks, she added. The Illinois Department of Human Services provides funding for a variety of services for people with disabilities, from small group housing to larger facilities with 9 or more residents, sometimes hundreds. It also offers home-based services that include day programs in the community, adaptive equipment, and job training. 15 years ago, a federal lawsuit accused the department of failing to provide community and home-based services to those who wanted them. It said the agency used an antiquated system of serving people with developmental disabilities that relies heavily on large public and private institutions. The lawsuit estimated that 6,250 people lived in these larger institutions, which it described as segregated and isolated from the rest of society, where the residents are denied experiencing the dignity and freedom of living in the community as normally as possible. While paying lip service to the value of community-based programs, defendants have made paltry efforts to reduce the state's reliance on large institutions or to expand Illinois's community-based programs, the lawsuit added. A federal judge agreed and in 2011 issued a consent decree requiring the state to provide such programs to those who requested them. It gave the state 6 years to provide individuals living in large institutions with community-based living arrangements, if they wanted them, and give community services to an additional 3,000 people who were waiting at home. After that, the state agreed to move people off the list at a reasonable pace. The list is a statewide database known as Prioritization for Urgency of Need for Services. The department uses this data to select people as funding becomes available. The agency says its selection is based on length of time on the list, urgency of need, and where the person lives. But confusion about the process is common among those who are waiting. As of November 15th, the Human Services Department said 19,474 people were currently on the list. Ronnie Cohn, a monitor appointed by the court, told the Tribune the state has met numerical benchmarks for the first 6 years of the consent decree, but it's too soon to tell whether people are being served at a reasonable pace. She said there is definite room for improvement, both in terms of the number of people served and the quality of resources available. Let's turn now to the local and state section of the Herald and Review. In this headline, driver, age 17, charged as adult in fatal crash, the story by Tony Reed. The 17-year-old male driver in a fatal Decatur crash accused of driving under the influence before plowing into a house and sparking a fire that killed an 87-year-old woman will be charged as an adult. Micaiah Jean Barton appeared in Macon County Circuit Court on Monday to be told he is facing two charges of aggravated DUI causing death. A judge approved the appointment of a public defender for the case. A preliminary hearing is now scheduled for December 18th, when a judge will decide whether there is enough evidence to proceed with the case as charged. Bond was fixed at $100,000, and Barton remains in custody at the Peoria County Juvenile Center. He can't be held at the Macon County Jail because juveniles are not allowed to be kept with adult prisoners. His mugshot is not available for the same reason. Decatur Police reports said he said the crash happened around 11 p.m. November 22nd when Barton's sport utility vehicle smashed into Mary D. Hinton's house in the 2300 block of East Locust Street. The impact severed a gas line which fed a fierce fire that broke out in the wake of the crash. Macon County Chief Deputy Coroner D. Coventry said Hinton pronounced dead at 1:54 a.m. November 23rd after her body was found in the blackened remains of her home, died from smoke and soot inhalation. Macon County State's Attorney Jay Scott said Tuesday he could not comment about why Barton was being charged as an adult, but said his office had discretion under the law to prosecute juveniles charged with traffic offenses in adult court. You may contact the reporter of this story, Tony Reed, at 217-421-7977. And now to this headline, Hungry Youth at Boys and Girls Club Get Evening Meals Thanks to ADM Cares, and this story by Valerie Wells. Jalea Norman loves playing Mortal Kombat, so every day she's at the Boys and Girls Club at Decatur. The first thing she does is check to see if anyone else is playing. I never have homework, said the seventh grader. I always get it done at school. Plenty of kids do have homework, though, and a growling stomach is not compatible with academic achievement, which is why the Boys and Girls Club, in cooperation with ADM Cares, began serving an evening meal to kids in August. The club had a short-term grant from the U.S. Department of Agriculture to provide food for the members, but that ended, leaving them with no funding for meals. As part of Giving Tuesday, volunteers from ADM Cares, the giving arm of Archer Daniels Midland Company, visited the Boys and Girls Club to formally kick off the meal program. The children need to eat in the afternoon because, for a lot of them, their last meal was at 11 or 12 o'clock at school, said Shamika Bond, executive director of the club. A lot of these kids are latchkey kids, and they're coming home to parents who are at work, and 40% of our kids come directly after school, so it's important that we provide them a healthy, nutritional meal so they can focus on their homework and their academics. We wanted to fill that nutritional gap that is missing here in the community. It's not just for the members of the Boys and Girls Club, it's for the youth in the Decatur and Macon County area. On any given day, 55 to 100 youngsters attend activities at the club, whether that's the basketball or other athletic teams, the homework room, the teen room, and that's the teen room, says where older kids can watch TV or hang out together away from the younger children, or there's the dance team that Skylar Click enjoys. I come here because it's fun and it gives me something to do, and I have a lot of new friends here, said Skylar, a fifth grader. They just make me laugh, and I just love the people here. They're really nice. Skylar does have homework to do after school and is glad to have a place to do it with someone to help if necessary, she said. Feeding all those kids doesn't take as long as you might think, said Charlotte Cook, food and nutrition specialist, who worked for the Macon County Extension for 15 years before coming to the Boys and Girls Club. She uses the meals as a way to steer young people toward healthy food choices. And because the members have to scan their ID badge as they enter, she knows how many will be there for meals. She starts prepping dinner about 4:15 p.m. and serves dinner about an hour later, choosing foods that are both nutritious and appealing to kids, she said. Every meal includes at least three of the major food groups. ADM has been a longtime partner with the Boys and Girls Club, said Jennifer Ballinger, director of ADM Cares. We've been thinking about how we could partner with them in a way that would be meaningful, she said. And as today is Giving Tuesday, we had a number of volunteers come to help serve the meals. And on top of that, we had volunteers come for homework help, and we just made a day of it. When she talked with Bond about what else ADM Cares could do for the club, Ballinger said Bond told her that kids come straight to the club from school and may be there for several hours without anything to eat. ADM, of course, being a food ingredient company and nutrition being such an important part of our mission, it seemed like a really great fit for us to step up and say, we will help you fund this program, Ballinger said. To the next story by Tony Reed. The headline is Police say staff stop. Okay, staff stop woman's assault on ex-boyfriend. Security staff at the Macon County Courthouse had to step in Monday afternoon to stop a Decatur woman who attacked her ex-boyfriend and father of her child, police said. A sworn affidavit from the Macon County Sheriff's Office said the 26-year-old woman started her assault as she and the victim, also 26, left the courtroom after a hearing involving their child. The affidavit said she hit him several times while descending the courthouse internal stairs, and the assault continued and accelerated once they got outside to the parking lot. The man told police the woman then grabbed his cell phone out of his vehicle and refused to give it back. He stated at that time she began to punch him repeatedly in the face and arm area, the affidavit added. He observed Macon County Courthouse officers in the window of the courthouse and was able to alert them to what was going on, and they came to separate the two parties. The woman was being taken away in an ambulance as deputies arrived, complaining of stomach pains and alleging her ex-boyfriend had thrown her to the ground and she had only hit back to defend herself. But police said the man's statements that he had not assaulted her were supported by the courthouse security officers, who told deputies they had only seen the woman striking the man. She was later booked on a preliminary charge of domestic battery causing bodily harm, as deputies said the man suffered a 2-inch-long, shallow cut to his left ear. Macon County jail records show that the woman is free after posting $3,000 bond. Prosecutors had wanted $5,000. She is ordered to stay away from her ex-boyfriend, his home, and his workplace. And now to another local story by Tony Reed. Man faces look-alike drug delivery charge. A Decatur drug dealer in synthetic cannabis was arrested Monday afternoon after police say they caught him selling the drug from a car parked in the 300 block of North Witt Street. The 49-year-old man had been under observation, and a sworn affidavit from Decatur police said officers watched him selling drugs from the front passenger seat. A police dog alerted to the presence of drugs, and the man is quoted as telling police, "There's spice in there, and that's it." Spice is the name of a form of synthetic cannabis, the affidavit explained. Writing in the affidavit, Officer Timothy Wisniewski said police seized more than 8 ounces of the drug packed in 37 bags with 10 empty plastic bags tucked into the front passenger door pocket. "Through my police training and experience, I know this style of bag is commonly used to package illegal drugs for street-level sale," Wisniewski said. The man was booked on preliminary charge of the delivery of a look-alike drug substance. Preliminary charges are subject to review by the state attorney's office. Macon County jail records showed the man remained in custody Tuesday night in lieu of posting bail set at $10,000. Prosecutors had asked for $30,000. All right, let's turn next to a piece here by Stu Ellis. Stu is, as it says here, an observer of the Central Illinois agriculture scene. And in addition to this weekly column, he also has his From the Farm and Harvest Heritage reports there on WCIA3 News. Mr. Ellis writes, "Will the USDA," or the headline for this story is, "Will the USDA money pit the money pit dry up for farmers?" And he writes, "This is the time of year for negotiating cash rental agreements for farmland, and there's going to be a potential problem for 2020. Lower than normal yields this year have created lower than normal income on farms, and the financial resources needed to meet landowner demands for higher rent will not be available. But wait, maybe they are. Yes, the U.S. Department of Agriculture has been handing out billions of dollars in payments known as Market Facilitation Program payments, MFP payments, to replace the loss of higher commodity prices from export sales to China. Landowners are certainly aware that farm operators are flush with cash, incapable of sharing some of that USDA largesse and paying higher cash rents for 2020. After all, farm income is now being provided at the direction of the White House, not necessarily received from the marketplace. And that creates a serious problem for University of Illinois farm management specialist Gary Schnittke, who is concerned that farmers will make cash rent promises to landowners and the money will not be there when the rent is due. Schnittke has worked through farm income projections for this year and next and found some serious financial pitfalls. He says farm profitability will be dependent on the financial handouts from Washington, and if farmers do not get any during the 2020 cropping season, they will be operating in the red and unable to pay even average levels of cash rent. We're actually going to continue this story in the second half hour. We're going to take a short break right now, and then, yeah, we'll return with Stu Ellis's story to kick off the second half hour of the Decatur Herald and Review for today, Wednesday, December 4th. So please stay tuned. Thank you.